And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer. And for the rest of this hour, we're heading up to Point Reyes National Seashore and concern about the tule elk that live up there. In recent decades, they've made a big comeback. That's the good news. But in the past 2 years, more than 250 of them have died inside the fenced-off area, in part for lack of water. They're also not that popular with ranchers who say the elk are interfering with dairy operations and other things up there. And we're going to delve into that controversy for the rest of this hour. Let me tell you who's with us. Melanie Gunn is Outreach Coordinator for the National Park Service up at Point Reyes. Good to have you with us.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
Also joining us by phone, her colleague Dave Press, who's a wildlife biologist with the Park Service. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And also with us, Jeff Miller, a conservation advocate for the Center for Biological Diversity. Jeff Miller, good to have you, too.
Good morning, Scott. Hi, Dave. Hi, Melanie.
Let me begin. Hello to everyone. Dave Press, let me begin with you. Just give us a little tule elk 101, will you? How many of them are there up there, and where do they live?
Well, sure. I'll take you back a little ways. They were historically native to the Point Reyes area, but were extirpated in the late 1800s, reintroduced in 1978 up at Tomales Point. Currently, we have about 285 animals up at the Tomales Point Reserve. That's a 2,600-acre reserve in the northern part of the park. And then we also have two herds of free-ranging elk, one in the Drake's Beach area and another one down in the Limantour Beach area. And the free-ranging animals, they total about 220 animals in the park.
And so the ones that are not free range then, or how many did you say?
There are approximately 285. That was our count last fall, but now the calving season has begun, so the numbers will be up a little bit. We'll be getting out later on this summer to get a better handle on the current numbers of animals that we have up on the reserve.
And why are, historically, I mean, why are some of them fenced and some of them allowed to roam around?
Yeah, well, the Paul's Point is where the reintroduction occurred, and the fence was built at the time of that reintroduction, which is, again, in about 1978. And the reasons for constructing the fence were twofold. I mean, number one, in order to reestablish the tule elk herd there, we wanted the animals contained within a reserve so that they could find each other and calve and breed rather than just disperse, you know, across the landscape and not, you know, gain a strong foothold on the landscape there. There were certainly also concerns about conflicts between the agricultural operations in the park at the time and the reintroduction of tule elk back into the park. And then in regards to the free-ranging herd, that herd was established, the first herd was established in 1998, and that was in response to concerns about overpopulation at Tomales Point. So animals were actually taken out of Tomales Point in order to establish the free-ranging elk.
And these are not native to this area, right?
Oh, no, they absolutely are native, historically native.
Okay.
Yeah, well-documented at European contact even, but then extirpated from the park, reintroduced with the cooperation of California Department of Fish and Wildlife.
And then I mentioned the die-off that happened over the last couple of years. 250 or so, I think, had died. Talk about that. What happened?
Well, I think we can all agree upon that it ties back into the drought, right? One of the worst droughts in California history. And, you know, this drought has affected wildlife species across the western states and in the marine waters as well, with all the you know, the sea lion issues that folks have been experiencing up and down the state. The exact cause of the deaths of any tule elk are still mostly unknown. We're not for certain that it was due to dehydration or starvation. There are other factors that may have played a role. For example, disease. We do know that some of the animals up there are carriers of paratuberculosis, which is also known as Yone's disease. And there are also concerns about natural mineral and nutrient deficiencies up on the range that, you know, we've actually known about for quite some time. And there may be a link to the drought and that those effects of a lack of nutrients were just more pronounced during the drought years.
And the ones that died, were they mostly ones that were fenced off, or were they mostly free range?
Yeah, that's right. The decline was in the up in the the smallest point reserve. But and it wasn't just an issue of animals that were perishing. The calving rates were also very, very low. And, you know, so we had about 540 animals in 2012. And then that dropped, you know, over a two-year period to around 285 just this last December. It occurred over time. There were no major red flags that there were these declines were happening, even though we were up into Moss Point quite a bit. It's not as if there were, you know, bodies lying around here and there that kind of raising those red flags. But, you know, I think what happened is that we had some good years leading up to 2012, and the herd essentially shot over carrying capacity. And then with the drought conditions, they came back down within more of a normal range, which is, you know, really quite natural and, you know, just it's sort of basic population ecology.
Yeah. We're talking about the elk, Tule elk, up in Point Reyes, the national seashore up there. I'm sure if you've been hiking, you've probably seen them. They're actually a great place to go for a picnic and or to just to look at the animals. They're pretty pretty fantastic. We've got two guests this hour for the rest of this hour from the National Park Service, Melanie Gunn and Dave Press, and also Jeff Miller, a conservation advocate with the Center for Biological Diversity. If you want to join us, now's a good time to call, 866-733-6786. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Or you can email us. It's forum@kqed.org if you want to write us or leave a message on our Facebook, or you can tweet us as well. All those are options. Jeff Miller, what would you add to what's been said already by Dave Press in terms of the population of Tule elk there and what your concerns are?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to note that while nearly half the elk inside the fenced area at Point Reyes died off, during the same period, the free-roaming elk herds with access to water increased by nearly a third. And the only management difference there is the fence at Pierce Point. And there's nothing natural about that fence. You know, it was a concession to the leaseholders, the ranchers, at the time when the elk were reintroduced, which was controversial. And we're concerned that the Park Service is allowing themselves to be cowed by a handful of ranchers who are trying to dictate park policy that's contrary to the park's mandate. It's against the public interest, and it's going to harm native wildlife. And there's two issues with the elk. It's not just the fence, which by the way, we think the Park Service should this is a good time to prepare a planning process to remove that fence that pins in the elk. It's unacceptable to maintain a fence that prevents elk from finding water during an extended drought. You even got Huey Johnson, the legendary conservationist and former state secretary of resources, calling for the removal of that elk fence. And this is the only national park we've got Tule elk, so let's not pen them in that peninsula if they're not going to survive.
In the interest of accommodating the ranchers, though, as well, who are also important up there, why not make a change in policy to make sure that the ones who are fenced in get the water they need, the food they need, that kind of thing?
Well, this is not this is a national park, and I know the Park Service, you know, they have a pretty good ecology ethic, and they don't want to have a managed, you know, zoo-like population, and they want wild animals to act like wild animals, but that's hard to do when you've got them fenced in. And those elk absolutely, if that fence wasn't there, would have roamed to other areas in the park nearby where there's fresh water and would have found the, you know, the resources they needed. The other big concern for us, though, even beyond that fence, is that the Park Service is embarking on a ranch management plan at Point Reyes that we think is skewed toward providing economic benefits for the handful of ranch leaseholders that's going to come at the expense of Tule elk and other wildlife. So you've got these cattle ranchers who enjoy heavily subsidized cattle grazing leases on the public lands, lobbying the Park Service to kill, sterilize, or remove or fence out the free roaming elk. And you've also got the ranchers lobbying to dramatically expand their commercial activities in the park far beyond cattle. They're asking to bring in turkeys and chickens, be allowed to plant vineyards, even sell permits to hunt the elk. And these activities would cause all kinds of additional conflicts with wildlife in the park.
Melanie Gunn, what kind of opportunity is there for the public to weigh in on this, and what are you hearing from the public?
Yeah, so we started our comprehensive ranch management plan last spring in April of 2014, and we've gone through some public scoping periods where we received 3,000 comments, and then this last fall we did additional public workshops where we met for two consecutive nights and had groups kind of weigh in on the most important things that we were hearing from the folks. And just to step back a little bit, this ranch comprehensive management plan addresses really that important partnership that the National Park Service has with ranchers at Point Reyes National Seashore. The ranchers have really been integral to the preservation of the peninsula, a really important part of the story here, and allowed to exist and operate within our legislation. So it's a really special relationship and partnership with ranchers here, and an important part of our story. And this Ranch Comprehensive Management Plan is the first time the National Park Service has looked wholly at the 28,000 acres that are within dairying and ranching within the park, and how to do that in the best possible way, given that it is a national park. How do we find that balance?
What you said earlier, that you're having people focus on the most important issues that the public has raised. What, other than the elk, what are those issues?
Right. So the Ranch Comprehensive Management Plan, we have, multiple objectives. The two primary objectives are to the Secretary of the Interior encouraged us to pursue offering 20-year leases to the ranchers that are out here. So that's one of the outcomes of this plan. And then the other is to address the concerns that we're hearing from the public and from park ranchers about the tule elk that are affecting the pastoral areas of the park, so the ranching areas of the park. So this ranch plan will not be looking at the tule elk that are in the wilderness near Limantour, nor the tule elk that are at Tamales Point, but the other areas. So a lot of the things that we're hearing about, and I encourage folks to go to our webpage. If you go to the park's main webpage and then go down to the features bar and click on the Ranch Comprehensive Management Plan, we've posted all of the public comments that we have received in the last year, including the workshops. And we're hearing really a wide range of interests on what folks would like to see happen within the park. There is interest in some diversification, as Jeff was mentioning, but of course, primarily the ranchers here will be doing beef and dairy ranching. And then they're interested in some level of diversification for economic flexibility. Some ranchers are not. We have 24 different ranching families, so it's a wide variety of folks with different interests and needs, with 40 different lease permits.
Yeah. Pardon me, didn't mean to cut you off. We're going to go to some calls in a moment. I just want to give out the number again. It's 866-733-6786 if you want to join this conversation about the tule elk and more generally management of the Point Reyes National Seashore. 866-733-6786. Here's an email question from Bill, who writes and asks, are there predators to keep the population in check of the tule elk? Dave Press?
No, unfortunately, they're not. Historically, certainly the Native Americans would have been hunting Coast Miwok in this area, hunting tule elk and grizzly bears, very active along the coastline here. We do have, I think, a healthy mountain lion population here, but the preferred prey for the mountain lion is black-tailed deer, which are really quite plentiful. So we don't have any significant predators controlling the tule elk herds here at Point Reyes.
Jeff Miller, is that a concern for you at all?
No, I think we could have a lot more elk on that peninsula and still have a healthy herds. And I haven't seen any evidence of damage or overgrazing or any ecological problems from the free roaming elk. And you can't say that about the cattle grazing leases. So I think really this whole issue has been framed backwards. We should be looking at the impacts of the cattle grazing leases on the native wildlife. We've got documented problems with overgrazing, soil erosion, water pollution, spread of invasive weeds. So let's look at whether the grazing leases are compatible with the mission and goals of the seashore, and let's not scapegoat elk for overgrazing by cows or the impacts of drought.
All right, we're going to go to the phones. And again, that number, 866-733-6786. And we'll start with Dan in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This ties into that last comment. Elk tend to be a free-ranging creature, and by keeping them penned up either by fence or by leases, don't you kind of create a zoo-like condition where the animal cannot, as conditions change, move to another area that would better support its life? So doesn't that make us responsible for food and water as those conditions change, given that they don't have any ability to move to a better place?
Dave Press?
Well, one thing to consider is that the Tuliel Kurds actually have, especially if you look at other herds statewide, they actually have relatively small home ranges within the Point Reyes National Seashore. I mean, elk up at the northern end of Tomales Point, for example, they probably never even seen that fence down on the southern end of the reserve. But I do think it is important to make sure that within those home ranges that we are, you know, managing elk properly, that they do have the resources that are available. It's more common that the males are wandering more widely, as males tend to do. And I think as we look at this management plan, we want to be considering, you know, management of elk within core areas, within those small home ranges, as opposed to elk that are, you know, more wandering the landscape within the park.
But to the caller's question, could the Park Service do a better job of making sure that the fenced-in elk have enough water and food?
Well, yeah. So right now we are looking at a contingency plan to make sure that there is water available if needed. The conditions out there currently are far better than they were a year ago at this time. We want to try to mimic natural conditions as much as possible. Our 1998 management plan calls for that. It calls for a hands-off approach to managing tule elk up in that reserve. On the other hand, this plan was written prior to these current drought conditions and seeing these significant population declines. The population is going to rise and fall with changes in the environment. What we'd like to see is that those population changes are more gradual, sort of following the natural trends of the climate, rather than seeing these big dramatic declines.
All right.
As we've seen.
Dan, thanks very much for the call. Let's go now to Novato. And Stacy, welcome.
Oh, hi. Yeah, Stacy Carlson, the Marin County Ag Commissioner, and been, of course, working closely with the ranchers out in the seashore and the park, and this environmental assessment's been a great opportunity to have a voice be heard collectively by the ranchers.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And so in the process, the ranchers have pretty much, felt that the park in its development from, 50 years ago when it was established and 100 years prior to that, ranched that land and hence, developed a relationship of having farming and dairy and livestock coexist, And I little reflection that of the 26,000 acres, it's probably the largest contiguous organic farming production system in the United States.
And Stacey, I'm just going to cut you off a little bit here because we're short on time. We've got about 10 minutes. Is there something in particular you'd like to see the Park Service do or not do, or how would you like to respond to Jeff Miller from the Center for Biological Diversity, who seems to feel that there's a skew of sort of toward the ranchers?
Well, look, the history allows the ranching to continue out there, and the park has clearly made a statement that ranching is integral in there, and the continuance is important for our economy. It represents 20 to 25% of our economic income from Marin County's agricultural production. It's 100% organic farming out there. You can't find a better biological diversity. They call themselves the Center for Biodiversity, but in fact, that whole area is the Center for Biodiversity, including humans in production of a food source. So this whole idea of subsidizing and this idea that the ranchers are getting a break or a benefit is sort of, not clearly defined, and I think it's a false statement.
All right. Jeff Miller, you want to ask a question of the Ag Commissioner since we've got him on the line?
Well, yeah, and I can clearly define it. The ranchers at Point Reyes pay a third to a half of what they'd be paying for grazing leases if they were on private land just outside the park. So it is a public subsidy and a public benefit. And, part of the cost of cheaper leases is there's certain things the ranchers can't do. They can't use pesticides. They can't shoot predators. And they certainly shouldn't be able to tell the park to remove native tule elk. So my question is why the ranchers think, why they can't accommodate wildlife when they've got these pretty sweetheart deals. And these are the same families that also received quite a bit of public money to purchase these lands.
Stacey?
So preserve it where in the wilderness where the elk occur, I think I heard a little glimpse of potential review of the management in order to allow the elk to have a little bit better, you know, habitat, more grasslands, you know, improve conditions versus them having to leave the area or migrate to find, you know, phenomenal pastures in which the ranchers and dairymen maintain. And that's the attraction. So the food source. So I think management, this is, you know, when you call it wilderness, you know, I see it as a different kind of wilderness. You know, it's really not a true wilderness. It's a defined wilderness, and it needs to be managed by man involved because it was created that way.
All right, Stacy, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Point Reyes, and Gail is on the line. Welcome.
Hi, guys. Great to talk to you today. I live out in Point Reyes. I spend a lot of time out at the point near the elk.
Lucky
and,
you.
And, yeah, I just have one comment. I say that if you're going to fence animals in, you've got to provide water for them. They can get by on the grass and the plants out there that they can graze on, but the fact that the free-roaming elk had no die-off and the elk behind the fence did have a die-off, it's directly related to water. And Dave Press, I know him. I disagree with his analysis of disease and lack of food causing this die-off. It was directly related to water. And if you really want to get the true story, maybe have Ranger Tim on the show next time, because he checks on those elk every day and he's got a totally different take on it.
Dave
it's
Press,
water.
It does seem like you downplayed the likelihood that this was, you know, perhaps human error in a way that these elk died.
Well, I just want to point out one thing is that, you know, we unfortunately did not have the opportunity to do any fresh necropsies on animals during this die-off. We did have one recently, an unfortunate roadkill up in the Tamales Point Reserve area.
But to the caller's point, doesn't it make sense, since there wasn't the same die-off on the free-roaming elk herds, doesn't it make sense that it probably was something other than disease?
Well, like I said, I think it clearly is related to the drought. But the point I'm trying to make is the actual mechanism, the actual cause of death for these elk is still an unknown. It was not determined. And in regards to providing water, as I mentioned before, absolutely, we will be looking at that. We will have a contingency plan in place by this fall. And we'll be monitoring the effects on that, because what we don't want to do, we don't want to be sustaining elk on the Tamales Point Reserve above carrying capacity. We want that number to be within check for the rest of the landscape there. We have rare plants there. We don't want to be causing soil erosion because there are too many elk. So again, it's about finding that natural balance. And I agree. I agree with the caller. I agree with you, Gail. We need to find a better balance, and we're looking into that right now.
All right, Gail, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. Let's go to Santa Rosa now. And Steve, welcome.
Hi. Yeah, thanks. I think that the current arrangement between the ranchers and the National Park Service is just right on. And I'd hate to see anything do to disrupt it. I mean, in the end, the greatest danger to our wildlife is open space. And I think that to the extent that preserving open space is promoted by cooperation between National Park Service and ranchers is just perfect. I mean, we can look at what happened with the introduction of wolves in Yellowstone, where there were conflicts between the National Park Service and the ranchers, and that's caused all kinds of issues. And I think the National Park Service has learned from that and understands that cooperation with ranchers is important. So I like what's going on there, and I'd hate to see it modified.
All right, Steve, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can get maybe one more caller in here. Ann in San Anselmo, welcome.
Hi. I'm just confused on the idea of what the ranchers and the dairy farming does for the area, for the open space. It seems like a one-way relationship where the ranchers are grazing the land, but why do we have ranchers on private national park land at all?
Dave Press?
Well, so the story behind Point Reyes, of course, is that this was all historic ranching areas, and the federal government, identified Point Reyes as a site for a new National Park Service unit, and that basically a deal was struck. Cooperation was made with the ranchers. They were very interested in protecting these lands. There were a lot of development pressures that they were facing. And so that partnership was formed, and our enabling legislation specifically allows for the continuation of beef and cattle grazing or dairying within Point Reyes National Seashore. And it's really, you know, it's part of the historical context of this landscape.
And does that respond to your question?
I guess, yeah, I understand the historical part, but I still don't understand, is it the right thing going forward?
Dave?
You know, the one thing to keep in mind about cattle grazing is that it really can strike a very healthy balance on the natural ecosystem. I mean, we have rare plants within Point Reyes National Seashore that really depend on cattle grazing. We have cattle are controlling non-native plant species that could otherwise be, you know, causing real harm across our landscapes. So, again, I think the management is absolutely important. We really need to look at best management practices if we're going to continue, as we will, agriculture within the park. That's what this comprehensive ranch management plan is all about, how to do it best.
And I'm going to let you go because we're short on time. I appreciate the question, though. Jeff Miller, let me just give you a chance to respond to what we just discussed there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, cattle are an invasive species, and there's all kinds of documented problems with, you know, damage to wetlands and streams in riparian areas. I mean, if you want to manage the landscape, elk are the best, you know, redistributing elk across the peninsula is one of the best things you can do to try to bring back the native landscape. As far as the historic ranching.
And just really quickly, please, because we're almost at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to point out there is no right to ranch in the Point Reyes enabling legislation. It's a privilege. It's a lease. The Park Service can revoke it if it's not consistent with protecting the natural ecosystem.
All right. Thanks very much. And Melanie, just really quickly, if people want to weigh in the next few weeks and months, where should they go? What should they do?
Absolutely. Come to our webpage, Point Reyes National Seashore, and look up the Ranch Comprehensive Management Plan, and we'll have public meetings and public comment periods up in the winter.
Very good. And there is a link on our KQED website as well. Thanks to all of you, Melanie Gunn and Dave Press from the National Park Service, and Jeff Miller from the Center for Biological Diversity. Interesting issue. Thanks very much for helping us understand it better. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Susan Britton, Suki Lewis, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from David Marks. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. For Michael Krasny, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.